Recording?
Yes.
Okay, the State of Arizona Acupuncture Board of Examiners meeting for October 9, 2024, being held telephonically, will come to order. The director will please note the roll.
Absolutely. Board Member Lahavi.
Here.
Board Member Tomas.
Here.
Board Member Klein.
Present.
Board Member Fontes.
Present.
And Chairperson Tan.
Present.
And we also have Jeannie Galvan from the AG's office, Richard Graham, our licensing coordinator, and myself, the executive director.
Thank you, and good afternoon, and welcome to the Acupuncture Board of Examiners meeting. As this is a teleconference meeting, I will ask that each member identify themselves prior to speaking, and that all votes be done through roll call via the executive director. The first item on the agenda is declarations of any conflicts of interest. None being stated.
Are we going to be doing those the names for the renewals?
Yeah, absolutely. Board Member Tomas, you can, from last meeting, if you'd like to abstain from that vote, we have enough board members now to ratify the licenses.
Okay.
Yeah, however, Chairperson Tan, it does look like we have, is it you or is it Board Member Fontes who's on this list also now?
I am not on it. Maybe Board Member Fontes is on the ratification of licenses.
Richard, is that familiar to you, or am I remembering something incorrectly here?
I think that was April.
Okay.
Yeah, that was April for Dr. Fontes.
Okay. All right. Well, if that's the case, then you know, we can go ahead. I'm sorry.
Okay, continue on conflicts of interest. We just have Board Member Tomas that will abstain from the ratification of the license because his name exists on that ratification. None others being stated, we'll move to agenda item number 4. The next item on the agenda is review, discussion, and possible action regarding legislation, substantive policy statements, and potential rulemaking. Director Jaraminski, can you provide a summary?
Yeah, Chairperson Tan, board members, this is an item that you've asked us to be reoccurring into the future. You know, in case any member wanted to discuss any of these items, I don't have anything specifically. However, one of these items does have its own kind of agenda item call out later on in the agenda, and so we'll be discussing that at that point.
Good, and that's in regards to herbal therapies, I believe. We're going to discuss in more detail.
Correct. And is this something that's still, you know, beneficial to you? Do you want to keep these on the agenda going forward, or would it be okay to remove them at this point?
Vice Chair Fontes, I refer to you.
The injection therapies, I think that's going to be ongoing just until the first of the year.
Right. I think we've got the herbal therapies as a separate issue. We've got the acupuncture assistance and the lasers. Herbal therapies.
The assistance and the injection therapies on until the first of the year.
Okay. I'm happy to confirm that. Director Jaraminski, is that okay with you?
Whatever you desire, certainly.
Any further discussion on item number 4? Okay, next item on the agenda, item number 5. Is review, discussion, and possible action regarding application for licensure and certification. License Coordinator Graham, would you like to provide the summary?
Yes, Chairperson Tan, board members. The director and I reviewed, this is for 5A. The director and I reviewed and found the following applications from individuals who submitted an application for acupuncture license, that they fulfilled all the requirements for licensure and were approved by the director and asked for the board's ratification. There were only 4 this time at this current moment. Do you want to go through all of them at once or do them one at a time? I apologize for not asking that before.
Executive Director Jaraminski, can we do them all at the end or?
Yeah, certainly. You can have Richard go through each one of these items on agenda item five, and then the board can move them all in one motion.
Okay, please continue,
Director. Okay. For item B, 1 through 6, which is regarding auricular acupuncture, the director and I reviewed the following applications from individuals for auricular acupuncture certificates and found that they fulfilled all the requirements and were approved by the director and asked for the board's ratification of these certificates. Moving on to item C, we did have one acupuncture assistant who completed the training from one of the programs that was approved by the board previously and asked for the board's ratification of the director's approval of their registration. Item D, the director and I reviewed the following renewals for acupuncture licenses to be complete and fulfilling the requirements for renewal and asked for the board's ratification. This is items D1 through 168, as it was combined with the previous meeting's renewals. And then for item E, the director and I reviewed the following renewals for auricular acupuncturist certificates to be complete and fulfilling all the requirements for renewal, and ask for the board's ratification as well.
Okay, and I know board member Tomas is withdrawing from this vote as he is on the list. Is there any discussion? There's no objections or discussion. Might I have a motion to approve?
Can I ask a question? This is board member Fontes. How many current acupuncture assistants do we have registered?
Let me look that up for you right now. I know we do have a few registered at this moment.
And we just have one on the list for today.
This is my part of my ongoing concern that people are doing it but not registering there.
I also have a question. This is board member Lahavi. What was the difference between B, certificates issued by the executive director, and then the E? Is E only AccuDetox and the other one not?
So I can answer both those questions, Chairperson Tan, if you like. We have, at this point, 7 acupuncture assistants who've been approved. For registration. For between those two items, one of them is an issuance of a new certificate, and which is B, and then item E would be ratification of a renewal of a certificate.
Oh, okay.
All right, 7. So that's up drastically from 1. But I still think that the community is lacking in education. Our licensees may not know that they need to register their assistants. And I fear it's the same way with injection therapy. They hear about it and all of a sudden they decided that's within their scope and purview. All right. End of discussion from me.
And Chairperson Tan, Board Member Fontes, to that point, I've had a discussion with Chairperson Tan, and we're planning on sending out kind of a year in review email blast to our licensees at the end of the year. So that would include information about those two items specifically for certain.
Yeah, it has to trickle down, and it does. I think the best way to disseminate this information is through the schools and through the acupuncture associations. And we just happen to have Dr. Wright here listening in. So I assume he's heard me.
Right.
All right. That's all I got. Thank you.
Fontes, do we have a motion to approve item 5, A through E?
This is Vice Chair Fontes. I make a motion to approve item 5, A through E.
Do we have a second?
This is Board Member LaJave. I second.
Okay, motion by Board Member Fontes and seconded by Board Member LaJave to ratify licenses and certificates, items 5A through E. Director Jereminski, do you have a vote?
Absolutely. Board Member LaJave.
Aye.
Board Member Klein.
Aye.
Board Member Tomas.
Abstain.
Board Member Fontes.
Aye.
And Chairperson Tan.
Aye. Okay, the item number five passes with all board members excluding Board Member LaJave, who is abstained. The director will record the vote. Item number six.
Sorry, was that that was Board Member Tomas abstaining? LaJave was four.
Apologies. Can we say that again?
I'm working on my hair, though. It'll.
So all board members have confirmed item number five, and the absence came from Board Member Tomas, as he is on the list. Will the director please record the vote? Item number six, the next item on the agenda is review, discussion, and possible action regarding the substantive policy statement on herbal therapies. Director Jereminski, can you give us an introduction to this?
Absolutely, board members. This is kind of part of the process as we're working to write rules for our herbal therapies statute that came out a little over a year ago, is that you know, we're getting feedback, right? And so as part of that, the pharmacy board has sent over this memo of concern, indicating some areas where they feel that it would be beneficial for there to be additional clarity on the communication to our licensees, and also on items that would be prescription only. They don't feel that the statute specifically authorizes acupuncturists to prescribe and inject. And so I would just hopefully you've had an opportunity to read through that memo, and you may have questions for our Assistant Attorney General surrounding this specifically.
This is Board Member Fontes.
Vice Chair Fontes, yeah.
Did the pharmacy board say what they're trying to prescribe? Or are they trying to prescribe chemotherapy and opiates or?
No, I believe it. I mean, it's written referral to the Arizona State Board of Pharmacy letter of concern that we have here.
I didn't see any specifics.
Yeah, they didn't identify any of the, but they're just referring to prescription drugs in general.
It'd be interesting if you are in rapport with them next time you talk to them. I wonder what they're trying to prescribe. I mean, what is the confusion here?
No, I believe some of the items in the Part B of the sustaining policies and the APIT substances approved, some of them are prescription
substances. Oh, the ones that are listed are
prescription. Yeah, I remember we had a lot of concern with a lot of them we didn't really understand ourselves.
Right.
And a lot of those are, it seems, prescription medications or prescription substances. So they are getting, I believe they're concerned because some of the pharmacists are getting prescriptions from acupuncturists for this APIT.
And so did they say what specific substances that are on our list? That
Director Jereminski, I don't believe they did, correct?
No, they did not.
Well, it's kind of hard to have an effective.
I think the question is their interpretation of herbal medicines. Does that include prescription substances? I mean, that's a little bit of a long bow to draw in my mind, too. I'm just wondering how we're going to justify that. They want some clear understanding of what is a herbal medicine, since we seem to have included everything on this list.
Board Member Klein, my understanding of the pharmacy's concern looking at that was that I don't think I think they're concerned that it might open a window for an acupuncturist to write a prescription in order to get one of these things that exists in both an over-the-counter and a prescription form. And I think their concern is they don't want anyone writing prescriptions to the pharmacies, because that would be out of scope. So that's kind of how I interpreted. So I think what my understanding is they're asking for us to define basically avoiding writing prescriptions, commercial prescriptions, or I don't know how they would want it phrased.
Right.
That's sort of how I understood this.
Yeah, I think we need to know what they're talking about, because at the same time we have licensees calling that says that these pharmacies aren't filling their orders for vitamins, because they say that it hasn't been communicated to the pharmacies that they can. So we're talking about unknown substances.
In terms of injection of vitamin B, vitamin B12, you need a prescription to get those products.
You need the license to order them.
Okay.
So we order regularly from several different compounding pharmacies, and they're gonna need a license on file to order. You can't just call up and order them.
What we're saying is that the acupuncture license in the past did not give us access to those.
Correct. And so
now
our office has been doing it through an MD license that works here, but potentially we could do that through the LAC.
And are we comfortable to label those products under the banner of herbal medicines?
Well, they're listed. That's why we want to know which ones the pharmacy board has issue with. I mean, is it the B vitamins? Is that
what I think called? What board member Klein was suggesting, it's anything that requires a prescription.
Well, you can't order. I mean, we know from our office, you can't order these things without a prescription. You need to give them the patient that you're, if you're going to do B12, you got to tell them who you're going to do it on. That's a prescription.
Isn't there also a process within the pharmacy to verify provider license? So wouldn't that just sending a prescription in pharmacy, as far as normal protocol, would look for their license or what their I guess name would be, whether they're an MD or acupuncture, and then question whether that should be filled or not?
Correct. But there are some, you know, the pharmacies, they have their protocols. You know, well, forever we haven't been doing it. Why should we do it now?
This is the first time they would have received prescriptions using an acupuncture license, for example, since the APIT has been approved. So the pharmacy board has concerns about that. And if you look at the letter, and I, you know, I don't know how important, because I'm not involved in any of the injection therapy, how important these prescription substances are.
Well, you can't do your injections without them. So I guess it'd be pretty important.
Well, I mean, you can potentially do all of the original Chinese herbal medicines.
Though, yeah, but I mean, we did go to the trouble to pass this law.
Right. So now we're going to have, so I don't know how we're going to defend ourselves against the pharmacy board here.
Well, I would like to know what, and I'm not trying to defend myself. I want to know what substances we're talking about.
Yes, board member Lahavi.
Yeah, how does it fit with knowing if you're allowed to prescribe based on the patient's, like, testing if someone needs it? Because I just know, you know, things like iron, you can't just prescribe just because you have a light, like, you still have, does it require people to test the patients before they just give it to them?
I'm not sure. Is anyone?
Well, anybody responsible practitioner is going to run labs. I mean, that's iron deficiency. I mean, that's not rocket science. And now acupuncturists have in their scope labs. So, yeah.
Okay.
Director Jaraminski, I see Mr. Wright Lloyd has his hand up. Is he welcome to join the discussion?
I think he can speak, but we can't speak directly to him. He can address the board, but we can't have it back and forth.
Yeah, so
if you want to allow him to speak on this issue, then you're free to do that. That would be within your discretion.
Yeah, well, he has a deep background in the history of this bill. So please, Lloyd.
Yes, thank you. Perhaps I could add a little clarification here. So the bill actually states natural substances. It's not just restricted to the injection of herbs. And so B12 would be an example of a natural substance. Serapin, which is derived from the pitcher plant, is another very effective pain relieving injectable that's been around for 70 years. Again, these are not narcotic level items or anything like that. So I think as Vice Chair Fontes is saying, it would be good to know exactly what their concerns are so we can, you know, kind of address them. But and in terms of acquiring them, there seems to be two different types of pharmacies. One that requires you to name the patient, and that would be a very prescriptive sort of issue. And the other one simply supplies the bulk to the clinic to be administered in the clinic. I would not recommend acupuncturists to take on the idea of writing a prescription for a patient and telling them to go down to the pharmacy and get it filled. I do think that is, you know, well past.
No, if I may, those are sent to the office. Injectables are sent to the office of the ordering doctor.
Yes, correct.
So they don't just send them to the patients and say, hey, go for it.
I've not had that happen. And I have not had any difficulty acquiring the substances that I need from any of the pharmacists that I work with.
And it looks like the major thing they're looking for is to clarify the distinction between herbal substances and prescription drugs, and clearly define the parameters of what constitutes a herbal substance versus a prescription drug. I mean, maybe we can include that in the substantive policy statement if we don't think there's too much overlap, and that would satisfy them. Any other discussion on next steps on this? Vice Chair Fontes is suggesting we want to find the actual substances that they want, that they're really concerned about. Is that?
Yeah, that's what I would like to know.
Okay.
It's hard to address a vague concern.
Director Jaraminski?
Yeah, Chairperson Tan, board members. I think some of the items that they're having a question about are, you know, and I'm not, you know, an acupuncturist or a pharmacist, so you'll have to excuse me, but my understanding is like something like Marcaine is a prescription only, you know, item, right? And so it isn't produced in nature on its own. And so I think that's their question, is items like that, you know, are produced in a lab or have been created, by a pharmacy.
All of these substances need to be produced in a lab for.
Mm-hmm. And I think on the other hand, we also have a lot of prescription medicines that we could say were from natural substances.
Right.
So that's where they want a clear definition, I think, you know. Yes, Tuesday Westman, please.
Thank you all so much. I really appreciate your work on this. May I say something from a perspective? I'm here today as a board member for the NCCAOM to talk about the exam we've developed for injection therapy and safety, mm-hmm. but I'm a licensed acupuncturist in the state of Colorado, and the state of Colorado also has injection therapy. And it's been a long history. It's been almost 20 years here. And there's been this back and forth with our pharmacy, too. And there's the conversation that we always come back to is the difference in the words prescribe versus procure. So in Colorado, acupuncturists can procure the substances that are in scope, like lidocaine and marcaine, because we use them for for pain management, but we cannot prescribe them to patients. So we procure pharmaceuticals for use in injection therapy because there are a lot of pharmaceuticals that acupuncturists are using in injection therapy, especially for pain relief. However, they can't be prescribed to patients. So the language we've used to help with that is that acupuncturists may procure the substances from the pharmacy for in-office use, which I think is what Dr. Wright does.
I think that is helpful, and thank you for your comments. So Director Jaraminski, do we have enough on this at the moment to go back to the board and potentially also researching the Colorado situation and how they've worded their statement? Is there any further discussion?
Yeah, this is Vice Chair Fontes. That's interesting. I wonder if that would satisfy partial of their concerns. Are they concerned with them prescribing it for the patients? Are they concerned with acupuncturists procuring these things for injections within the office? That would be a question again for the pharmacy board.
Director Jaraminski, any other thoughts, questions, discussion?
Chairperson Tan, board members, to some of that question, the policy statement is split up into an A and B. Our herbal therapies includes the word prescribe because you can prescribe, traditional Chinese herbal formulas and, individual herbs and so on and so forth, right? And so you should be able to prescribe and, provide those to your patients. I think what's important here is to your discussion is clearly defining, those items that you have in for injections, how those are used and, procured and, dispensed. So. I agree. I'm happy to look up the Colorado laws and work with probably Jeannie and the pharmacy board to get some more clarity about, what exactly, their pharmacists are going to need in order to provide our acupuncturists with the substances they need to do injection therapies.
On face appearance, it seems that the Arizona scope is a little larger.
In terms of substances?
In terms of the ability to prescribe versus just procure.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, I think we got the first steps. If Director Jaraminski can follow up that, this is gonna have to be on the agenda for next meeting. Or is there anything else to add on that?
If I may, I put those links for you in the chat box to Colorado state language, just so you have them.
Thank you, Tuesday.
No, I'm actually pleased on this discussion. It could be really helpful for clarity for our licensees. It's great.
Yeah, and it's critical at this stage while we have this substantive policy statement up that we're working on at the moment. Okay, moving on to item number 7. The next item on the agenda is review, discussion, and possible action regarding the allegations of unprofessional conduct. I apologize, we had to pause that from last meeting as we ran out of time, ran out of quorum. Director Jaraminski, can you give us an update and summary?
Certainly, Chairperson Tan, board members. Is Jason Caldwell on the line? Is he present? No. And Richard, you did confirm that he was invited and was going to be present today.
Yes, I did send him a reminder email about the meeting, and he did tell me that he was going to be present.
Okay. So, Chairperson Tan, it's entirely up to you. How you run your agenda. We can wait in the hopes that he'll show up in the next half hour or so and take this item a little bit later, or we can take it now. It's entirely up to you.
I think we can just take it now. He's had plenty of time to join. It's 30 minutes into the meeting. Is there any updates to what we had learned last meeting?
No, we don't have any new information about the case specifically. From the conversation that we had with him previously, he's not intending to, make any payments on the court order until after the first of the year. And so I don't know that there's any update at all.
What are our options?
So I'm just checking with AAG Galvin, we had a situation where we were trying to get a consent agreement for this licensee to pay by a certain date, but it seemed that previous AAG Baskin had suggested that we could only do that with some form of disciplinary action. Do you have an opinion on that?
I have a question, if I may, Board Member Klein. What is on the legal side, since there was a court ruling that he has to pay, what happens outside of the board legally if he doesn't pay? Is there
So what could the court do if he doesn't pay?
Correct.
They could look into some garnishment remedies, perhaps seizure of assets if he doesn't pay. The board jurisdiction runs to your definitions of what constitutes unprofessional conduct. And I believe that, Ms. Baskin had advised you that I'm unable to determine where this conduct, failure to comply with an order for payment at the court level, would constitute unprofessional conduct under your statutes.
Okay.
I don't.
And then I didn't.
I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I didn't see in the court documents. Did the court give him a deadline he needs to pay by as well? Or would that have to?
That was the frustrating thing. As far as we can see, there was just an interest payment that is accumulating where there wasn't any final date, which is the frustrating part of the order from the court. So, I mean, we could just simply dismiss the case and leave it up to the courts. But AAG Galvin, I mean, the board's duty here is also to support the Arizona legal system in some way. We know that, in this case, he completed two treatments out of a package, and then the person had not completed any of the other treatments, and it does feel a bit unprofessional that he can't return that money in due time.
His material does state that money's paid towards treatments and treatment packages is non-refundable, that it could be applied to a different type of treatment or therapy. The complaint focuses on his failure to pay an order or comply with the court order with respect to payment. And while your mission is to protect the public, and we can't use this administrative procedure to enforce or assist in the enforcement of a court order in the civil arena.
Can you repeat?
I'm sorry.
Can you repeat the last part about enforcing something in the civil arena, like our part versus?
Yeah, so your part has to do with obviously the licensing and the enforcement of your statutes and rules. Ensure an applicant complies with the education requirements, training requirements, etc. The fact that this licensee is subject to a court order with respect to payment, this board in the administrative arena doesn't have authority to assist in the enforcement of that civil court matter.
Right. We don't have an ability to force the person to pay, but we do have an ability to put his license on probation as a result of unprofessional conduct.
So, and maybe we need to go into executive session, but you would have to find which definition of unprofessional conduct, failure to comply with the court order, fits, because I was unable to.
Just as a reminder, the only reason we're actually dealing with this case is because the client is complaining to the board that the payment has not been made, correct?
That is his assertion, yes. And you do have jurisdiction over the licensee, and you have jurisdiction over the complaint. and you can consider the complaint, but that does not equate to the conduct constituting unprofessional conduct and violating your statutes.
Thank you.
What, this is Board Member Lahavi. What if I don't even care about the court's decision because I disagree with it? I don't have all the information, but I don't even think he is should be required to pay back. The guy, the client, got, he could have paid per session. He chose to try to get a discount by buying in bulk. That it was the client's choice to pay in bulk. And he could have applied that the rest of the money to other things. He didn't have to. I mean, he chose to spend the money on to get a discount. That's a scam. He's scamming him.
So this would affect how you would vote on any anything proposed by the board.
We don't know what the practitioner promised. We don't know from a consumer protection. There's a lot of predatory packages that people forced into. You know, there's many aspects to this, and it's difficult for us. We just feel there's a court order. The person hasn't gone against the court order. So would it be just most appropriate just to dismiss this case if we can't do anything necessarily?
I would agree with that, since it's not our job to make people fulfill the court orders. Now, if there's a legal injunction against them for not paying it, then we can deny license renewal later.
Right. Director Jerominski, do we know when the gentleman's license renewal is up?
Yeah, we can look that up. Hold on a moment.
And that specific question is not before us, and I don't know if he remains in default of that court order, that would more than likely not be grounds for denying his application for renewal. If you don't have grounds to discipline him at this point, you're probably not going to be able to use those same grounds to deny his renewal in the future.
If I may ask, we don't have grounds because it's a civil matter?
We don't have grounds because the conduct does not appear, and I have not been able to find a connection to your definition of unprofessional conduct, and I haven't been offered a suggestion of how it violates that. The report talks about violation of L, which is committing conduct that is contrary to the recognized standards or ethics of acupuncture profession, or that may constitute a danger to the health, welfare, or safety of the patient or the public. So if someone can let me know what ethical standard in the practice of acupuncture that this would relate to, or a recognized standard in the practice of acupuncture that essentially defaulting on a civil court judgment would relate to. In my research and in Mona's research, we were unable to find any connection. The other possible violation cited was violating or attempting to violate directly or indirectly, assisting in or abetting the violation, or conspiring to violate the chapter or board rules. Again, I could not find any other statute in your practice act or any rule that says defaulting on a civil court judgment violates the standards of practice or the ethical standards for an acupuncturist.
So just to summarize, AG Govern, we really have two choices, either to just dismiss this or enforce some sort of disciplinary action and prove how it was in violation of our codes.
True, yes.
This is Board Member Fuentes. In light of all this information, I move that we dismiss.
I second that.
Is there any further discussion? We have a motion.
I just, one more comment. I mean, it seems like the most notable thing is they're not keeping their information up to date, but I think that happens quite a bit. I don't know if that even justifies discipline.
What information are you referring to, Bowman McLean?
The licensee keeping their contact information up to date with the board, because that is part of the requirements of licensees.
Can you confirm that, Director Jaraminski? Or
yeah, so Chairperson Tan, board members, one of our rules requires that licensees update us with their address and phone number within and email address, residential and business phone numbers within 30 days of any change. He's well over 30 days from when he last updated, changed his business address, phone number, and email address. And so technically he's in violation of that rule. So that, or that would be your decision whether he would be in violation of that rule. Yes.
Right. Seems unrelated to the case.
It did cause delays in the board's responding, is my understanding.
Yes, AAG Galvin, you have something?
And I haven't, if that was not in the report, that's in the documentation. It sounds like during the email communication back and forth with staff, he did know that he has this new address. I just didn't know, because it wasn't in the report, if it was investigated, if how we determined if he was late and by how many days.
Mm-hmm. I did see a red flag that bothered me besides the change. Again, I don't know if we can do anything about it, but he just keeps changing the number of sessions everywhere you read. And when he was in the meeting in person with us last time, he couldn't remember the number of sessions that were part of the packet and the number that the guy received. And then in one part of our notes, it said 4 out of 4, which is totally weird because then it was like 2 out of 10 right. 12. Well, it's so all over the place.
Relevant just because the court order has actually named the amount, you know, with the package price less the 2 sessions that were given plus the court fee, I believe. So the amount, he knows very clearly how much he needs to pay and he's been charged interest on it. And in this situation, I have to agree, there's not a lot we can do unless we want to go down some disciplinary action route. So can you please repeat the motion, Member Fontes, Vice Chair?
With a little discussion, would anybody here be interested in
phoning
repercussions for not changing the address in time? Is there anybody who would like to pursue that?
Well, within our scope, this is Board Member Tomas. I mean, what are our options? How can we what would be an enforcement on something like that?
Historically, Mr. Jaraminski, I'm not familiar with this board and what they've done in the past with individuals who have not kept their contact information current. You would have that option available to you. I don't know, letters of concern or civil penalty.
Yeah. It just seems to me, if we had to go down the route of the unprofessional conduct, I feel like we could justify it in terms of the, you know, the fact that he hasn't, I know that the contract says that the person is not going to get a refund, but if you haven't provided the treatments that someone has paid for and you're refusing to pay that money back, and then you have a court injunction to tell you to pay it back and you haven't done that within a year, I think that justifies unprofessional conduct. But to me, but you know, it depends how you'd like to phrase it. But at the same time, do we really need to if we're confident the guy's going to pay in January? That's my way of thinking about it.
This is Barbara Malahave. Is there a way to postpone this discussion for January? Is there an advantage to that?
I don't think there's any advantage at the moment. I mean, I feel like it's the discussion. It's one of those cases that really shouldn't be in front of us because the guy should have just paid. But as most of these unprofessional conduct cases play out, I just think we should make a decision and move on if that's possible.
I think we could see his contact. We can see if he's paid by then. I don't know. We could see. We might have more.
Explicit, we can always revisit it. Correct.
Chairperson,
you could put it on the agenda for January if you want and dismiss it now.
and Chairperson Tan, board members, a couple of things, and Jeannie can go ahead and cut in and correct me, but I always hate to see a case, sit around for too long, right?
Yeah.
And so I think people have a right to have it, adjudicated as quickly as possible. Also, I think that what our assistant AG is saying in part is that the fact that whether he does or does not pay the court order is immaterial to, the board's powers to, take any action against him. And so the question is, does the board find that, some action should be taken about the failure to keep his address up to date? The last time he would have updated that would have been December of 2023 with his renewal application. And so, and we communicated with him in August about his address change. And so it is, much over the 30-day requirement. I don't know, again, this may be a question for or your assistant AG, but I don't know if you can take the content of the original issue that the patient had with the payment, schedule and the conflict with that, apart from the court order. There are some questions as far as that.
This is Board Member Fontes. To me, I'm in favor of dismissing the complaint, but I would like to know from the board members if they want to pursue some kind of discipline for the lack of informing the board of an address change.
This is Board Member Tomas. I think there's something there to be looked at, whether maybe he didn't receive an update, as far as getting updated. Maybe he didn't know that, but I think that should be known, because that's just not dealing with the patient and then changing your address. That's questionable as far as professionalism. As providers, we're supposed to be accessible to our to our patients, and if we're not able to be accessed by the patient, definitely the board should be able to contact if there's any questions, and if that's not updated, that's an issue.
So this is Board Member Lahavi. I remember he said he was in another state investing in a new office using that technology, and then the funding didn't work out. So it wasn't exactly purposely neglectful of clients in Arizona. I think he was just trying to establish himself somewhere else.
AG Galvin, if we end up dismissing this case on, we can always add an agenda item for the change of address for next time for him. But in this particular unprofessional conduct, we could dismiss this situation. But if we do dismiss it, if we get another request from this client in 6 months that he still hasn't paid, we're able to revisit it, correct?
If you dismiss the case today, then it is over. You have adjudicated it. Uh-huh. If the complainant files a new complaint, it would have to be based upon new information, new facts, etc. And if he does that and it's in 6 months and the licensee still hasn't paid, we're still back to where we are, that default of a civil judgment is not unprofessional conduct under your statutes. Is it something that we should do, we feel morally that it should happen? Yes, but it's not something that we regulate.
Thank you.
All right, this is Board Member Fontes again. I would like to raise a motion to dismiss this complaint.
Do we have a second?
This is Board Member Lahavi. I second that.
We have a motion by Board Member Fontes and a second by Board Member Lahavi to dismiss the allegations of unprofessional conduct, item 7. Director Jaraminski, could you run a vote?
Absolutely. Board Member Lahavi.
Aye.
Board Member Klein.
Aye.
Board Member Tomas.
Abstain.
Board Member Fontes.
Aye.
And Chairperson Tan.
Aye. Okay, we have ayes from Board Member Lahavi, Board Member Klein, Vice Chair Fontes, and Board Member Tomas abstain. The motion passes. The director will record the vote. 8, finally moving on to the agenda item and review and discussion of possible action regarding the presentation from the National Acupuncture Injection Therapy Board. Director Jereminski, about to introduce, or do we want to go directly to Lloyd and Tuesday?
Chairperson Tan, yeah, absolutely. We have Lloyd Wright and Tuesday Wasserman, who's here from the NCCOM and from the Arizona Acupuncture Society, and also from the, and you'll have to remind me of the actual title of the new board that you've created here, but they're here to make a presentation on some exam standards that they're going forward with, and I thank them for being here.
Thank you, Director Jereminski, Chairperson Tan, and honorable board members. I really appreciate this opportunity to update you on how far we've come along. We have basically been working on this project for pretty close to 2 years now. We came up with the name National Acupuncture Injection Therapy Board. And it pretty much describes what we're looking at to do. Primary endeavor is to establish a national standard of education for doing injection therapy. And so I just wanted to start off and just kind of outline how we went through that process. My esteemed colleague, Dr. Tuesday Wasserman, is been in charge of developing the exam part of the process. So I'm going to let her talk about that when we get to that part of it. Basically, we believe that there are about 10 states now that have injection therapy listed as within their scope of practice. So we felt it was time to actually create a national standard, and we're hoping that each state will eventually adopt that standard. And toward that end, we'll establish a board to oversee and to improve that as that moves along. So we started off by looking at creating a committee, a development committee, that would consisted of current instructors, general educators, and administrative types of folks. So on the instructors, we had John Ross, who was from New Mexico, Christina Captain, who I think most of you are familiar with. She has been doing workshops here. Chris Justinson from Utah, and Aaron Nickman, general education and guidance, Tuesday Wasserman, who has taught for Pacific College doctoral level program and has done other work in this area with Colorado, and Terry Powers also helped us for a short while. On the administrative end, there was myself, Mina Larson, David Canzoni, Daniel Zhao, and Janet Zand, who were both with the NCCLM board of directors. So we basically got together approximately once a month for when to do our meeting, and we started off. We reviewed all of the programs that were available to review, and they ranged from 25 hours or 16 hours all the way up to 60 hours. One of the things that bothered me when we first adopted this in Arizona was the APIT. And I looked into it and I thought, wondered myself, well, who is APIT? Who is that? And I found that it was nobody. It was just a set of standards that was adopted by Florida. We don't even know who established those standards. So we wanted to go in and do this correctly and do this with expert expert advice and expert testimony. And so that was another reason that we felt doing a national standard would be very important. So the first thing we did was we established what are the competencies, what manual skills are needed, what substances are used, how do you mix those substances, and what safety issues need to be addressed. And then the group proceeded to assign classroom learning objectives to each skill set that we came up with. And then we divided between didactic versus practical. We then proceeded to establish how many hours does it take to educate the average acupuncturist on this injection skill versus that injection skill versus that. And so all of that, kind of came through and worked out, and we established what we call classroom learning objectives. We can make those. We have those documents. If I haven't made those available, I can certainly make those available to the board for your review. You're welcome to take a look at those. After that, it was a matter of establishing a separate exam process. So we basically envision.
Dr. Wright, how many hours did you come up for?
Yes, cut right to the chase. So basically, the group came up with 40 hours. And there was long discussion. Some wanted like at 25, and there was the 60-hour program. But 40 hours was what the group came up with, and they recommended a minimum of 16 of those hours be hands-on practical practice. So that's basically what. And I
imagine also relevant to our communication process with the pharmacy board on how many they're asking for the training and education requirements for this injection therapy.
This is another reason why we believe this process is so essential, because when we go to a pharmacy board and we say, well, those hours didn't just appear out of the clouds. Those appeared because we pulled together experts in the field. People who are actually teaching this and people who are actually doing it. And this is what we came up with. And this is and there's a rationale behind every hour that we've assigned. So I think this should be very helpful relating to the pharmacy boards. And it should be very helpful for states that want to begin to include this in their scope of practice as well. So
and reasonable for the licensees.
Yes. Well, there's always that thing with regulation. You want to regulate to a level of competency and a level of safety, but you don't want to raise the barrier to entry unreasonably high. And that's always the balancing point with regulation, right? And I think the group came up with exactly, the right answer. And believe me, we processed it quite extensively. And Tuesday just popped up a little memo here. Tuesday did a wonderful PowerPoint presentation taking a look at the differences between the different states. Is she able to share a screen with folks? Is that something that can be done?
She should be able to.
Okay. Tuesday, you want to come in and you want to go ahead and share your screen. And then after you finish with that, Tuesday, you can go ahead and proceed to talk about how the NCCOM established the exam parameters. Oh, I was going to just add one last thing before you do that, and that is we have two separate functions. One is the injection board, the other is the testing component, which according to national standards needs to be separate organizations. And so the board establishes the standards, approves the providers. Separate board exam is created by the NCCOM, and that creates a lot more legitimacy, where you don't have the person providing the education should not be the person giving the test for the for the authorization. So that's one of the reasons we separated out. Okay, Tuesday, I'm going to go ahead and turn it over to you.
Is there currently an NCCOM exam?
That is in process. I'm going to let Tuesday answer that question. Go ahead.
Thanks, Lori. That was a beautiful description. And I have just been so impressed with Arizona this whole way for everything you guys have done with updating your Practice Act and your standards. And so I'm coming in. I have a history as an educator. I've taught at a number of schools. Most recently, I've joined the NCCAOM Board of Directors, but I've served on exam development for the last 8 years. And the exam that we've been developing for you for Arizona, we expect it to be ready quarter one, but it was very much in line with NCCAOM mission to assure the safety and well-being of the public while supporting the profession, but really promoting these established national standards focused on competency and credentials, and really wanting to make it easier and safer for folks in Arizona by bringing these competencies and standards to help you guys be a model for the rest of the country. And everyone is following Arizona. We've had 5 states who want to model what you're doing with injection therapy and adopt this exam. And so we've been building this exam, like Lloyd said, with subject matter experts from all over the country, choosing the best. And I'm sorry, I can't share my screen because of my own permissions. But what I'll tell you about that process is we went through all of the states that currently have injection therapy, their total minimum requirements of training, including the minimum clinical practical. And our subject matter experts came up with a number that is the same as what happens when we average the 10 states that currently have injection therapy. So that 40 hours minimum of education with, I can't recall the hands-on, I think 16 hours of hands-on education to ensure that safety. But then the exam goes through all of the processes of can test takers demonstrate that they can perform these techniques safely? Can they perform the different types of injections safely? Are they familiar with the substances and the safety in terms of the profile of each substance being selected and injected? We do talk a little bit about that procure versus prescribe, because prescribing is, injection therapy is meant to be for in-office use. So it's thought that acupuncturists are going to be using those substances in office. And that's something where patient safety comes up really highly in the exam. And we're here today to see what questions you have, or if there's anything we can do to help you in terms of adopting this exam for Arizona.
So again, my question is there a current NCCAOM exam for this?
It is, yes, it is in development and will be ready to go live quarter one. So it is in the process of final quality assurance testing.
And do you anticipate this moving more of education in the schools? Because, you know, traditionally people go to a school and then they take the NCCAOM rather than an independent provider.
So this is going to be a certificate instead of a certification. So right now we have the 4 board certifications for master's level. This is going to be a postgraduate level certificate program. And so students can take the education while they're in school. They will either have to have graduated from an ACOM accredited school or passed all of their board exams in order to sit for the injection therapy exam, because it's assumed that they are licensed practitioners, and that's where that safety level comes in. It's not a student level competency.
Thank you. Any other questions or discussion?
A couple final notes is we anticipate and are looking to work with the American Society of Acupuncturists to have the NAITB board affiliate with the ASA. So again, we're going to work with the one national association that we have. And this idea was modeled after what a lot of the other professions do. In particular, we noticed that the physical therapists have 10 different board specialties, and you know, they are all sub-affiliates of the National Physical Therapy Board. And in reviewing them, I thought they did a pretty marvelous job of that. Similar story with the chiropractic and the nursing professions as well. So we're sort of modeling after after what's already been done. We're you know, no point to reinvent the wheel, as the old saying goes. But that will be the next part of the development on my part, is to establish that that board and establish that relationship with the NCCOM as they move forward in the exam part. And we anticipate going live sometime after January.
This is board member Tomas. I just had a quick question for clarity. For the NCCAOM exams, was all four exams a qualifying factor?
They'll need to have, that is something that, and I'm sorry, our CEO Mina Larson was really sorry she couldn't be here today. And she did say, I appreciate that you guys left us on your agenda, because she would like to come back and follow up with you either next month or in December, before the first of the year. But as far as those details for who's going to be eligible, that would be something that we'd love to work with you on. And is it licensed acupuncturist? Because we do want it to be accessible, and not all states require all four board exams. And so the, in terms of the exact eligibility, we're assuming they're graduates, they are eligible for licensure. And then the question is, will they have to have had, which board exams will they have to add? Absolutely, you'll have to have to demonstrate that safety and competency for clean needle technique, because while we do some needle technique, we don't want it to overlap or repeat what acupuncturists already know. And so that's something I can ask Mina about, in terms of what are going to be the requirements for people to sit for the exam. My understanding is it's for students who have graduated, who are licensed from an ACOM accredited school, and who are licensed. I'll check on that.
Yeah, but good question. If it's just the acupuncture license, or they need some sort of at least the NCCAM herbal exam qualification. Dr. Jeremyski, can you remind us, for the injection therapy right now, we have a education requirement. Is that one course, the APIT course? Is that the, or there's, were those two courses that were approved or accredited before the NCCOM was available?
Yeah, I think there are two courses currently available. And even, you know, my recollection of the legislation said that the person could take an NCCAOM certification exam, or they could take a course approved by the board. So it's up to the board to, you know, kind of adopt this and say, yes, we are encouraging people to take an NCCAOM exam, or keep the ones that you have going forward. But I think there are only two at this point.
Right. And Lloyd, the two courses that were approved, we believe there's two at the moment. Are they vastly different from the education program that you guys have created, or are they fairly similar, you would say, or based on the same structure?
I would say they're very similar. The main difference would be the additional 20 hours that they have. And exactly how they fill that 20 hours, we'd have to drill into our learning objectives. But that was one of the things that was under, you know, discussion for the past 2 years. But I'd say everything in the 60-hour course covers everything in the 40-hour proposed course, and then some extra. And I've only taken one. I took Christina Captain's course, and I know she did a lot of additional stuff with homeopathics, which, you know, that may or may not be included in the 40-hour course, or it may be touched on, you know, somewhat, depending on the instructors what their own particular interest is. We really try to leave as much flexibility with the instructors as possible.
And I imagine the course, and your course is aimed at obviously competency, but also to pass eventually this NCCAOM exam.
Correct.
And then, Director Jeremy, once the NCCAOM exam is approved, are we most likely just to make that the basic level one competency level? That's up to the board, I imagine.
Yeah, that is definitely up to the board. Let me pull up the actual statute so I can.
I believe it's four at this point, but, you know, once things become the standard, that may change. Because if the schools start offering this, you know, there's no doubt that it'll become the standard.
Good. Was there any further discussion? I can give you a moment here, Director Jaraminski, but. All right, well, thank you for the presentation.
Shelby, before we get off this, and then we're looking at least for now, multiple paths to certification. Is that correct, Director Jaraminski?
Yes.
Yeah, we have, I think, NCCOM and any other injection therapy course that has been approved by the board independently.
It does look like it's heading towards standardization, and I, for one, will be in favor of that in the long term.
Well, I'd like to thank you all very much for your work and attention on this matter and for allowing us to come and give you guys an update. And hopefully in a few months, we'll be able to come back and say, we're going live and we're ready to rock and roll with it. So again, thank you very much.
And thank you both for your tremendous amount of work. And it seems like you're laying the groundwork for not only for the profession to add this sort of certification, but additional certifications like the chiropractic and the physical therapy. I mean, I can see.
Vice Chair Fontes, are you reading my mind?
I mean, I could see you adding homeopathy to your
homeopathy, but also other board specialties. I mean, we do have on a board specialty in reproductive medicine, and we had one in orthopedics. I don't see any reason why we can't continue to develop board specialties in other areas of medicine, whether it's respiratory or allergic reactions. Because as we all know, traditional Asian medicine has a very broad scope of capabilities, and I'd like to see those all developed.
Dr. Wright, it does, and as usual, he's shaping the nation here.
Well, I'm just doing my part.
Thank you guys for being proactive. We really appreciate just being informed of what's going on, especially at the association level with Lloyd and also at the national level in the certification. Thank you very much.
Okay.
Moving on to item 9. The next item on the agenda is review, discussion, and possible action regarding Director Jaraminski's executive director's report.
Absolutely. Board members, you know, once again, I want to say thank you to our licensing coordinator, Richard Graham. We get, you know, we don't get a lot of surveys into the board office. However, the vast majority of them are extremely positive. And so this is something that, you know, and I say this over and over again, usually the only people that are filling out these surveys are the people who are unhappy. And, you know, for us, it seems like it's the opposite. We get a ton of people coming in and saying, hey, we got really excellent service. Thanks so much to Richard and the board for, you know, a really smooth process. This is so much easier than other states and so on and so forth. So I want to congratulate the board on putting together really great policies and choosing to regulate with a light hand, and also to Richard for doing a great job with our primary interactions with our licensees. So, as far as, I guess I'll skip down to HB 2910. This is something I just wanted to bring to the board's attention. You know, a few months ago, the board raised fees, which was extremely beneficial in order to make, you know, basically, you know, put us just slightly back into the black for our revolving fund. However, the legislature passed this bill this year. We are traditionally what's called a 90-10 agency, which means that 90% of all the revenue we bring in stays with the board and goes into our bank account. And then 10% of that goes into the state general fund for them to spend as they like. This bill modified that, so now we're an 85-15 board. So the state keeps 15% of everything that we bring in instead of 10%. And so what we saw, you know, as a trend was that we were going to be putting about, you know, $6,000 or $8,000 into the account after all of our expenses every year from our 90% cut going forward with the fee increase. And now it looks like we're still going to be maybe a couple $1,000s in the red at the end of the year with this change. And so nothing that we can do about it. Part of the legislation restricts us from modifying fees anymore during that time period. Luckily, it's only for 3 years, and so that should be eliminated at that point. There's not much we can do about it at this point, but I did want to make the board aware of that we are kind of flattening out with our expenses, which is good, but we're not getting ahead like we really need to.
Thank you, Director Jeremy. Can you confirm that? So we were in a 90 ratio 90-10 board went to an 85-15, mm-hmm. but the 85-15 is only in place for 3 years and then it goes back to a 90-10. Is that?
That's correct.
Okay. That's well, I think our timing for our fee increase was good. Otherwise, we'd be in more trouble, but
yeah,
back in the red.
Yeah. And so just as an example, in July, we brought in total revenue, our 90% of $14,700, and our expenditures were $13,200. And so there was not a huge split, but we were putting a little bit of money in the bank every month. Now we're spending about $18,000 and we're bringing in about $18,000.
Right. And we only have a certain amount of funds in our account that can support that difference right now.
That's accurate. Our current fund balance as of the September cash flow reports is $88,000. And so, we were after the end of COVID, we were sitting at about $100,000 in the bank. And so we were slowly, our fund balance was slowly decreasing every year. This should basically flatline us. And so we should be sitting at about 88, going into the future. But we will decrease just a little bit over the next 3 years. Not drastic. I'm not expecting that it's going to put the board into a negative, cash balance for our bank account, but it is going to decrease a little bit, but part of the other issue with this is that there's a difference, the money that we have in our account and the money that we're bringing in revenue and the money that the legislature has authorized us to spend. And so we bring in a certain amount, but we're only authorized to spend a certain portion of that amount. So, the last couple of years, we've basically run out of appropriation, run out of authorization to spend that money. And so we've had to do, some accounting, limbo in order to make that happen. And so, we're requesting a larger appropriation this year with some, backup documentation for that request. But that will only, exacerbate the issue going forward. But again, I don't think we're going to be heading into negative territory with our cash balance. But, we really did need that fee increase. And so, we've cut out everything we can as far as, we've eliminated one of our offices. We've, I don't have a cell phone, there's no there's no extraneous, expenses at all. It's just, our office and us. So.
Okay, was there any questions for Director Jerminski? Thanks for sharing that with us.
So moving forward, do we anticipate we're going to be covered or are we going to be short?
Yes. So, the answer is yes. We have enough money in our cash balance to cover us for the next 3 years as our fund balance, I expect, will decrease. However, it shouldn't be to a point where it becomes critical for agency function.
Thank you. Okay, moving on. Item number 11. Item number 10. Next item on the agenda is a view, discussion, and possible action regarding the future board meeting dates and times. Director Jerominski, do we have any changes there?
No, this is kind of our standard, fourth Wednesday dates going into the future. In December, we usually combine the, October, November, December dates into an early December date because of, vacation and scheduling conflicts. And so we're going to have a December 4th board meeting coming up here. And the same in December next year, December 10th. We usually take a break in the summers, and so that July or May date, you know, could be tentative, you know. So we'll just keep the board up to date as far as, you know, what the board's needs are as far as making sure that we're handling all the board's business, and we'll work with the chairperson and make sure that happens.
So confirming our next scheduled meeting is currently at December 4th, because we don't have a late November meeting, and then mm-hmm. we combine November, December together.
Yeah, we have a December 4th. And that'll be telephonic, but the January 22, 2025 board meeting will be in person at the board offices.
Correct, that once a year. Okay, thank you. Was there any questions or discussion on that? 11, the next item on the agenda is a call to the public. Is there anyone on the public that would like to...
My name is Tony Benali. I would like to.
Oh, Tony, please. Non-agenda items, please make your statement.
Dear esteemed board members, Mr. Jaraminski, Mr. Graham, and Assistant AG, my name is Tony Benali, and I'm speaking today as a licensee of 23 years, a former dean of clinical operations, clinical supervisor, and professor at Pima for 18 years. I also provide CEOs. During my years, I served two terms on the board with 3 years as a chairperson and my last year as secretary. I found my time on the board full of challenges, lots of work, but some fun. I appreciate the work done by this board and try to encourage others to get involved. In 2022, I took the first acupuncture injection course here in Arizona. And after that, it took 5 months and over 7 unanswered emails and phone calls before I was able to get a little information from the current, from that board chairperson at the time. The information I received helped me get the instructor to attend the board meeting call and help push the envelope to get a part of our license. As a former board member, I am familiar with the steps and processes, and have several people that took that class with me that gave up doing the injections because they grew tired of waiting for approval or direction from this board. In January of this year, I submitted a course for continuing education approval, one that I've had approved several times in the past. After more unanswered phone calls and emails, I was asked to resubmit the request a few days prior to your March meeting. I did so immediately and still received no response. The board meeting came and went, no response. The date I had hoped to teach the class came and went as well. Now I'm gonna go work with NCCAOM to teach this course and other courses, and will no longer need the Arizona board involvement. As a former board member, I'm kind of disappointed that I would even find that a preferred option. This last month, I've had conversations with two former students who are current licensees, and I found they had equally disappointing experiences with the board as well. No responses to requests, unanswered emails and phone calls. One renewed her license back in April and has still not received a paper or digital copy. The second one is involved in something that she could potentially have somebody working using her credentials illegally, possibly practicing without a license. According to her, she's been in contact with the board since August of last year and has not received any word back. As a former chair and an educator, I've always been concerned with people that practice without a license. These accusations potentially show negligence and malfeasance. A little over a week ago, I contacted a board member to discuss my concerns. He was very prompt in returning my call within an hour, and I appreciate that. Since that time, the website has been updated, including today's date of the meeting, and uploading over 70% of missing meeting minutes for the last 4 years. Yet those meeting minutes are not actually meeting minutes, they're just the voice recordings of the meetings. So I will be spending many hours listening to the meetings just to find out what's been going on. when I was elected to chair years ago, I spent a whole day in the ED's office learning how it worked. During that day, I saw the templates for the minutes, and it was a very simple process, easy, quick, drag, add a few notes. According to State Statute 323904, Executive Director, Personnel Duties and Compensation, Section A, the board may appoint an executive director who serves at the pleasure of the board. Section C, executive director shall perform the administrative duties of the board and perform other duties as directed by the board. Statute 323903, powers and duties of the board, Section B1, the board may employ personnel needed to carry out board functions. Section 2, purchase, lease, rent, sell, or otherwise dispose of personal and real estate property for the operations of the board. As I read this, the board hires, fires, and directs the administration of their work duties. When I try to contact the ED, he is never in the office that our association is renting for him. The responsibilities of our board to communicate with the professionals they will serve would protect the public is a vital part of functioning efficiently and effectively. Your response to these concerns would be greatly appreciated. Thank you for your time.
Thank you. We cannot respond to this comment. We can make an agenda item for the next meeting. We have any questions or discussion on that within the board members?
I mean, Chairperson Tan, board members, I mean, I can only say that I'm sorry she had a frustrating experience. I'm certain that there are, you know, surrounding circumstances for much of it, but our licensees should be able to get a hold of the board and get answers quickly. And so I agree with that entirely. We'll definitely make sure that happens. So I can only apologize.
Any other comments? Yes, Lloyd.
Yes, just one final notation. You folks were speaking earlier about getting some announcements out to the community. We do try to get a newsletter out once a month, and we are in the process of announcing our annual meeting on October 27th. So if there's something the board would like to communicate, you know, by all means, just, you know, shoot a short paragraph over to me. We'll be happy to convey that to our mailing list as well. So I think this is, yeah.
Thank you. And I believe we have a couple of items, including the acupuncture assistant and the injection therapy, just talking about the regulations involved in usage. Any other comments, anything
yes,
else?
This is board member Fontes. I would like to review the concerns of the licensee at the next board meeting.
Okay, that takes us into item 12. There are items that the board members like to place on future agenda. So, Director Jerominski, could you place that on the agenda for next meeting?
Yeah, certainly.
And could the licensee with the concerns please forward the letter to us so we can use that as a...
I will do so.
Thank you. Okay. Any other items to place on future agenda? Board members, I appreciate your time, presentations, appreciate you coming on. Meeting went longer than usual, so thank you very much, and I will hope to see you on December 4th.
Board Member Fontes. Yes, on the 4th, I guess it's safe to assume blocking out 2 hours would be substantial. Is that the consensus here?
Director Jerominski?
Yeah, it should be sufficient for, you know, going forward.
Okay, thanks.
AG Galvin.
I'm just seeking clarification with respect to the agenda item, and I'm sorry I didn't catch her name, the former board member's concern. How do you want that agendized? I don't know, because you have personnel.
Yeah, right. Can we address it as addressing concerns from licensee Tony Benali?
Okay, so not specific to like a performance review of the executive director?
We could do that.
Sure.
I just want to be sure that we get it on the agenda appropriately so the board can, you know, freely discuss whatever it feels it needs to.
Is that the most appropriate way to go about it? Vice Chair Fontes, your thoughts?
Yeah, if we can do the performance review, then we just take each one of these concerns one at a time and ask about them, and we'll get some answers.
Okay.
The one that's always on the agenda, number 9, when he talks about, you know,
the executive director's report. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Couldn't he give us more background on what he thinks might be going on?
That's a report. We're going to do an inquiry.
That's a recurring one, and then we'll just add an extra item on the agenda to do a performance report on the executive director based on the concerns. of the letter, and Tony Benali.
So I'm happy to, in fact, always happy to have a performance evaluation. So that's something we haven't done for a couple of years. And I can put that on the next agenda. You just want to just have to let me know what it is that you want, you know, as far as information, so I can get that to you. Also, that should be agendized, I think, as an executive session item.
It is. And if you would reach out to me, David, I could help you with that agenda language and make sure that you get the letter that's required, et cetera.
Okay. Was there anything else we need to do there? Assistant Attorney General Galvin, are you satisfied with that?
I am. Thank you for the clarification.
Thank you. There be no.
Could we one quick inquiry into that. Can we also discuss just the general procedure for, I guess, the community as a whole to be able to contact and maybe discuss like the steps.
So I'm not quite clear on your request. Is it included in the agenda item on the performance review or a separate agenda item?
Separate, just to discuss about the, I guess, our procedure as far as being able to
like response time
to the community.
Things
on
like
inquiries.
On inquiries and response times?
Yes.
Vice Chair Fontes, do you think we need it as a separate agenda item or we can include it?
Can you be more specific?
You know, Chairperson Tan, board members, what I can do, and, you know, just to help the board get a picture of, you know, how the board is responding to things, because sometimes I feel like again, like I was talking about in the surveys, the people who communicate are the people who have a problem, right? Usually with, with issues like this. And so I'm happy to just kind of keep track of response times for, you know, emails and, phone calls over the next, whatever it is, 2 months. And then we can give that to you at the next board meeting, if that's what you're talking about, for over 2 months.
Yeah, I mean, that more information is always good. I just wanted to be clear as far as like the process of when somebody in the community wants to mm-hmm. reach out and has a question, as far as their method of contact, how that work, how's that mm-hmm. work, is that information available on our, like, maybe on the website, as far mm-hmm. as like how to go about it, how that consumer can reach out and contact us, and make sure that they're doing their part as far as being able to access all the resources available.
Yes, through us. You know, I can do is just send you an email with that information on how people can get a hold of us. That's helpful.
I'm satisfied with the performance review, because one of the main things about the executive director's performance is the response times by email and phone, and I think that can be included, and mm-hmm. the process that, you know, of the numbers and emails that are available and how that process works, and we can go through that and
yeah. review. Okay. That. Like I said, I'll keep track over the next, you know, 2 months, and you'll have a clear picture of how the actual response times of the agency. So,
board member Tomas, is that satisfactory to you?
That'll be discussed in the executive meeting, then, correct?
Yeah. So next meeting, we'll have a separate item on the agenda, which is an executive director performance evaluation and review, and that'll be one of the major items within that.
Okay.
And remember that the community is always welcome to join the meetings. So if anyone wants to join the meeting publicly, they're always welcome to do that. And we, in fact, encourage that.
So I would love to have
that I understand, but I believe the executive meeting is closed to the public.
The executive part of the meeting?
Yeah, if there's an executive session.
Executive meetings are closed to the public.
But there may be parts of that don't require executive session, like processes for responding to emails, timeframes, things like that. Just general, maybe kind of board operations that may not fall under specifically the executive director's performance. So the invitation, of course, always stands for the public to join.
Thank you for that clarity.
Board Member Lahavi?
I just wanted to make sure that the executive meeting is after hearing what's going on, why some messages don't get through. Yeah, first to get the information, just to make sure it's after.
Okay. Item 13, there be no further business. We are adjourned at 1:35 p.m. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.